Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Guess who's back? Back again! Vinnie's back. Tell some friends. I was going to say tell some men. It's an inside joke on a band called, what's it called? Eminem, I believe. Yes. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're having some ridiculous technical difficulties, as we do during live broadcasts when you don't pre-record stuff, when you've got to have people calling in and that kind of thing. So we have Brendan O'Connell as our guest tonight. Brendan, how are you going?
I'm very well, Vinny. Sorry, I'm a little late.
Well, you know, you actually just came in about early because I was about to start making excuses of why you weren't here, and you cut me off.
I tend to do that. I hope I haven't offended you.
Well, one can only hope. Now, we only have, since I think September last year was the last time I actually did a live broadcast, mate. Like, seriously, you're the first person to be interviewed by me in such a long time. I hope you feel honoured. Now, you've gone through some really troubling times, I understand, as a lot of activists, and I don't like to use the term activist as a phrase I like to hear. Oh, I don't like to use the term activist. It's like, why not, bro? Somebody who's actually actively doing something with their life for some kind of benefit for the greaterment of humanity in some description of way, you know? Is that an activist? Oh, they're just terrible people, you know? They need to get a job. You know, they need to be selling cell phones to people who don't want them, or approving loans to people who can't pay them back. You know, this is what life is, should be about.
Oh, no, I get that all the time. Yeah, I get that all the time. Get a job, you bum.
And it's like, get a job, bro, get a life. Okay? People say, oh, what do you do? Well, I do my job, you know. So somebody else tells you to do, are you planning to do that for your entire life cycle? Is that what you're planning to tell your children? Is it to spend your entire life doing what some other person tells you to do? Is that your plan?
It is your plan. It's a very comfortable life for many people. You never have to think. Go to work, you knock off at 5, you go to the beach, you drink some alcohol, you have a look at the ladies, and there's your life. It's like the life of a dog.
Yeah.
Wag your tail, you're fed, take a dump on someone's lawn, and you're happy.
Yeah. I was thinking about the difference between the life of dogs and cats, you know. Dogs have owners. Cats have staff.
It's true.
And just thinking about this government scenario, who are we under the control of, right? Where's all the hidden hands going through? And you're going through thousands of years of history. You're going through deep, many, many, many levels of secret organizations and things of that nature. You're going through geopolitical control in order to just give somebody an even vague estimation of where the true control power structures in society actually are, right? So you're up against a brick wall because you've got people who've had tens of thousands of hours more time to refute even thinking about the things that you would tell them before you've even had a chance to open your mouth.
Pretty much, yeah. I think as Professor Noam Chomsky says, you know, even if you get on the telly, you're supposed to refute something in 25 seconds. How do you do that? How do you refute a lifetime's propaganda in 25 seconds soundbite? How do you do that?
Yeah.
Thank God for the internet. Thank God for Vinny.
Well, I was thinking, if you've got a quip, right, we talked this one time about every time you start a conversation, there's automatically these miscommunications, these misplaced ideas. And you notice when people are trying to communicate efficiently, they spend about maybe 20% of the time prefacing what they're about to say to limit people thinking about it in this way, and then justifying what they were saying a little bit afterwards so that anybody who was still unclear what the original point was gets herded back into this. And that's what we call clear communication, a communication without equivocation, as to coin a phrase. Now, when we're talking about race, religion, and geopolitics, these are very, very deeply held beliefs. And deeply held beliefs are viciously defended. Right? And that's what a lot of activists start to recognize as the true viciousness. I have this phrase that I go, you don't know what you're up against. You know, you see all these little new truthers and things like that that just waking up, that just found out 9/11's an inside job, and they haven't figured out that Israel had a hand in it. It's just like, I'm sorry, the world is not all sunshine and rainbows controlled by an evil overlord. It's an evil overlord that's over an evil overlord in an infinite cycle like a fractal painting. All right, bro, you know, there just ain't no escape from the reality that you've got to do something wherever you are, whoever you are, in whatever capacity you can. You've got to play your part to expose the agenda and do what is right. So I've had my rant. Brendan, sorry, O'Connell, I would like you to please introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Well, I have this thing called a mouth, and it tends to get me in trouble. I'm 46 years old. I was born in 1970, October 27, 1970. I was reading your bio recently. We have some uncanny similarities. I'm always one of those people that said, that's not fair. That was my favorite saying to my mother, that's not fair. The most telling thing was 8 years ago on May the 2nd, 2009. Before that, though, I worked as a comprehensive registered nurse, psych trained, as well as acute care setting, non-vent, ICUs, emergency departments, coronary care settings, general wards. I worked at that for 4.5 years till I had enough of the healthcare industry. I did love the job, though. I did really love nursing. I love the people contact. I met a lot of very interesting people. Then, to cut a very long story short, at the age of 31, I had my statin return, as people would say, and I thought, enough, it was my fifth,
if I may,
midlife.
Somebody else told me, the other day, oh, to cut a long story short, and I wish they hadn't. Is there a longer version?
We've only got an hour. How many hours have you got? Because my life is one big adventure.
We could conceivably give you 2 hours if it floats your boat and if it tickles your pickle.
Well, like, I dropped out of nursing reluctantly. I wish I hadn't, because I'd be making $2,000 a week clear in my hand and probably be able to do anything I wanted to do anyway, travel the world, work 2 days a week, work a Saturday, Sunday at $120 an hour. I regret a lot of things. I'm the Che Guevara of Western Australia, a rebel without a cause. I see things clearly, and then I realise that just because I see things clearly doesn't mean anyone else does.
The James Dean of Western Australia. Dean, yeah.
But like you, I'd worked in nightclubs and pubs in security. I met a lot of people. Saw a lot of very interesting things in the nightclub scene, worked out how the world worked, including that the police deal the drugs. The police literally deal the drugs. Mm-hmm. The police literally run the bikies. The police literally run the gangs. And the only time you ever see a gang getting hammered is because they're not paying up or they're not cooperating with the police. Mm-hmm. Period. End of story. Enough said. And if people want to know how the drug trade works, please watch The Departed with Jack Nicholson, Matt Damon, Leonardo DiCaprio, and also Training Day with Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke. Denzel Washington got an Academy Award for that. And that's how the police work. So I had my eyes open from a fairly early age in my mid-20s. I got my nursing degree, of course, stopped doing all the nightclub security work. Got a little disillusioned with that. I realized it was a healthcare industry. It was nothing but a medical mafia. You know, I could tell you stories that make your toes curl about nurses, drug addiction, the things that go on, the doctors. I mean, I wouldn't trust half the doctors with my dead dog's doo-doo in the morning. I don't mean to be nasty. Nurses are just as bad. People have a lot of public faith in the system.
Huge drug addiction rates, huge alcoholism rates, huge cases of them, taking their own medications and things like that.
Kidding? It got so bad. They have to put cameras in everywhere. They've got to put undercover police in the hospitals, man. I mean, every nurse has a very well-stocked first aid kit, and I had a very well-stocked first aid kit. Mm-hmm. But I didn't go to work off my head. I've had nurses shoot up on the ward and walk out with the blood dripping down their arm on a children's ward. I'm like joking. St. John and God Hospital in Subiaco, I'll never forget it. I was handling the urology side. She had the children's side. And I said, look, after you finish your shift, please don't come back to this hospital. I could tell you stories. But anyway, It was a medical mafia. No one wants to cure anything. The patients don't want to know about, you know, the ketogenic diet and cancer cures and eating healthy and exercise, even though the degree course does that. The nursing degree, I recommend, man. It's a fantastic degree. It's good money. It's worth doing. They teach you about prevention. But when you get out in the real world, it's all about medicine. It's about million-dollar machines, the machine that goes ping, the famous Monty Python skit. It's about ripping people off. It's about doctors getting kickbacks for prescribing medication and referring people on. I met three PhD scientists in my time doing door work. Would you believe they're all powerlifters? And they told me how the research area goes, how they just make up the results. So gradually I'm getting disillusioned through the whole system. You know, I'll give you an example, CT scans. How many people know that a thoracic or a full body a torso scan is worth 4,000 chest x-rays? How many people even know that? 4,000 chest. Who would go and have 4,000 chest x-rays in one go? But that's a CT scan. And when I raised it with the Joondalup Health Campus Emergency Department radiologist, he said, because I actually said 2,000. He said, no, it's 4,000. He said, dude, it's a $5 million machine. We've got to use it. Quote. And I just said, I can't do this anymore. I just can't. And, you know, people ask me, what do you think of this doctor? I said, I wouldn't trust him with my dead dog. I think he's a pedophile and he goes to Thailand five times a year and he's an alcoholic and he's handshake and I have to lie. I couldn't bear it any longer. So when I dropped out, I read a book by James Hillman, one of my favorite Jungian psychotherapists. And he wrote a book with Michael Ventura called We've Had 100 Years of Psychotherapy and the World's Getting Worse, about how psychotherapy and psychiatry has become a servant of the state to keep people placid and in line, worrying about whether mummy weaned them from the breast too young. And he said, we need a revolution in the physical world as well. And then I read his other book, The Soul's Code in Search of Character and Calling. And he talked about famous people who dropped out and just tried to find what they really wanted to do. So I grew pot. I dropped out. I was into permaculture and all that stuff. I didn't smoke pot, didn't like it. Just made me go to sleep and eat ice cream. So I became the hydro master. I became very proficient hydroponic marijuana grower. I sold to doctors, nurses, lawyers, all the hoi polloi of town. I was busted in 2003. It was a commercial quantity. The police very kindly, they laughed at me and said, you're the nicest bad guy we've ever met. And I got off in a very light sentence. I'd had enough. It was ridiculous how big it got. But that's where I got up to. That was 2003. And I've just been drifting ever since. I tried twice to go back to nursing. Twice I went to do the re-registration course and came up against incredible resistance. For one, I refused to have the vaccinations, and I argued vehemently over the phone with the lady. And this would be very interesting for people. This is exactly what happened. For five solid minutes, we argued, and I said, "Listen, I know a senior medical scientist, genetics and molecular biology, and I know for a fact he told me those things are highly dangerous, full of toxic chemicals." And I named that person. I said, "He's just down. He's three floors down from you in Royal Perth Hospital. All right, so don't give me this garbage that these things are safe. I do not have to have that vaccination. You cannot force me to have a medical intervention. And I tell you, if you keep it up, I swear to God, I am going to make an example of you and I'm going to take you to the West Australian Supreme Court." So after a five-minute shouting match, she simply goes, "Well, okay, you can be a conscientious objector then." And after that, I couldn't even get a look in
to get back into that course. Objector. What is it? It's like, yeah, World War II on people's veins.
Think about it. Think about it. Those things are toxic, and the lowest rate uptakes of the vaccinations are doctors and nurses, because we know the freaking things are toxic. They are bad for you. I know senior medical scientists, genetics and molecular biology. And he says, don't touch them, man. Just look after yourself and keep your immune system strong, and there's other things you can do. But that was the beginning of my wake-up. And I went, this is just all crap. I've got to fight night and day. I just bring up, I even supplied documents to these people. And they still fight with me, and then they gossip about you, and they hate you, and they talk about you. And it's like you know, Carl Jung once said, the natural man. He says, if you're a natural man, you speak the truth, you will upset the entire world, even good old Jesus. He said the same. You're going to be at war with the world. If you're into truth, you're going to be at war with the world. And if you're not at war with the world, you're not doing the right thing. So if Christians in particular are sitting very comfortably making money, then you are not a follower of Christ, whether you believe he levitated or whether you believe he was a social activist or whatever.
He said that followers of a church would rather burn their prophets than burn their corrupt church.
And that's everywhere. That Pharisaism, that rabbinic Pharisaic Judaism, it's Pharisaism is everywhere. Whether, you know, you're so clean and fair without on the outside, but inside you're full of dead men's bones and all corruption. That's everywhere, whether it's the Catholic Church, Protestant churches, many of the mosques, everywhere. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be Jewish to be a Pharisee. It's everywhere. Fake politicians, smooth talkers who are nothing but common pedophile, common utter garbage criminals. I mean, look at me, look at you, or look at me. People will see my life and think, well, Brennan, you've done some pretty risky things. You've done all this, you've done all that. You know, I can't even get a job, and yet I'm the most honest person you're ever going to meet. I'm the most dedicated. I read in your bio how you wrote that 7-page report about how the company wasn't working perfectly. Look, I'm just like you. I just want to make things better and help people. And when you do, they come after you. The system comes after you. And so I just drifted, read books and drifted into this subject. I'd heard, first got into it in 2000, slowly learned about this vast organized criminal conspiracy, which is too hard to take in. I was even training as a monk at one stage, been single for a long time myself. I was so disgusted with the world. I went to the Holy Transfiguration Monastery in the Blue Mountains of New South Wales under Father Alexis Rosenthal, was the abbot. He was the abbot of Jerusalem for 16 years. I was accepted to stay. I was even accepted to stay over Great Lent at one stage, which is unheard of, particularly being Catholic. I hadn't converted to the Russian Orthodox. They were Russian Orthodox outfit. So, you know, I'm meeting some very interesting people. At that stage, I also raised the issue of Leon Wend and Israeli intelligence activity, Collins-class submarine, weapons and sensor systems, and Detective Colin Hush came after me just before I flew to Canberra to go to the monastery. And it really started in 2005 when I first met Leon Wend and raised the issue of the Collins class sub. And that's when stuff started happening that took me years to work out. I was getting stalked, I was getting followed, and I'm there scratching my head going, I didn't move that chair. What the hell's going on here? And finally worked out I was being gaslighted, which is just standard for the for the cause. Here I am today. When in May the 2nd, 2009, I woke up and wasn't even going to go to the Friends of Palestine rally at the IGA supermarket to protest fruit from the occupied West Bank. I woke up and said, to hell, the Arab world is spending billions on weapons. We're all starving ourselves to death trying to solve the Middle East problems. What business is it of mine? To hell with it. I'm not going. I've got to get a life. I'm 38 years old. I'm going back to nursing by hook or by crook. To hell with the whole issue. I don't care anymore. I rolled over, and 15 minutes later, boom, I was wide awake and out the door, and I ended up at that shopping centre. Met Stanley Elliott Keyser, took the video of him calling us, or I called him a racist Jew with a religion of racism, hate, homicide, and ethnic cleansing. As you do, I did some pretty good quotes. Hannah Kasher, the Israeli secular academic who quotes from the Old Testament, the Jewish Old Testament, the Book of Samuel, slay them all, spare them not, kill man, woman, infant, and suckling. That's newborn baby on the breast. Camel on ass, leave nothing alive, which is all through the Old Testament, and the Talmud is worse, the Shulchan Aruch is worse, the Zohar is worse, which just shows you how that attitude of racial, homicidal, ethnic cleansing just permeates their entire society, not just their Orthodox religious Jews and the ultra-Orthodox Hasidim, who are certifiable lunatics, but also their secular academic, their government. You know, you've got the Shaz Party, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, who called us all slaves. And that's the only reason God made us. And I mean, and there I am getting charged under Section 80B, which is conduct likely to offend, that I likely offended Stanley Elliott Keyser in public, which is identical to Section 18C, which is in the newspapers at the moment, and also Section 77 of the state criminal legislation for 5 comments I made on a blog, which were nothing comments. Professor Norman Finkelstein says 10 times worse. But they charged me on 5-6 counts of that. And that's up to 14 years jail, and I ended up with 11 years total, which was made concurrent to 3 in a farcical trial. The Israeli state came out against me, the ambassador, Yuval Rotem, the Israeli deputy foreign minister, Danny Ayalon, this foreign minister of Australia, Stephen Smith, 135 local and federal members of parliament attended 1 week before the original start of my trial at a Friends of Israel rally. Started by Jewish community leader Steve Lieblich, who I accused of being a Katzer or case officer and had my house raided for offending him. Again, they subsequently dropped the charge. There are world's first that have happened to me. And Vinny, how many people have even heard about me? 3 years jail, 2 years, 4 months maximum security. I had my arm broken, untreated for a month. I was beaten and bashed. I've been rung by Minister Joe Francis in charge of prisons, best mates with Tony Abbott, invited out for beers with him and James McMahon, the Commissioner for Corrective Services, ex-Special Forces Commander, SAS, which is based in Campbell Barracks in Perth. It's a Hollywood movie. And now I'm on the run in, you know, I went to Iran for 2.5 months. That was bizarre. I don't know what's going on in Iran. God bless them, and I know many of them are fighting, but there's in the upper echelons of the under Rouhani, these moderates, there's something weird going on. I left there, I couldn't handle it anymore. I had to fight tooth and nail just to get them to discuss Jewish, racial, and religious supremacism as the foundation of the Israeli state. And they said, we don't want to upset our Orthodox Jews. And the lawyer I was with actually said, I have an Orthodox Jew who's my mentor, straight to my face. And I went, okay, right. I could talk for hours. I met some very good people there, the Persian Gulf Study Center, which is affiliated with Iranian intelligence. When I left, they deleted their website. I've got video footage of them, which I'm going to put up later, where I was doing their videos for them. I had to fight tooth and nail for 3 weeks, scream at this lawyer, if you try to divert me from these two issues, Israeli intelligence activity and Jewish, racial, and religious supremacism, I will walk, and I will do videos about there's something strange with Iran. Finally, after 3 weeks, he said, hey, I've organized with the Persian Gulf Study Center. You can organize a conference in Tehran on this issue, and you can work with the Persian Gulf Study Center. I got in touch with Dr. Alan Sabrowski. He said he was very keen. And then after 3 more days where the lawyer looked like he was on drugs, I couldn't stand him any longer. I said, give me my passport. We're about to get it stamped for a 3-month extension. I met Connor Hosseini at Passport and Border Control Intelligence. He was a good guy. I met a lot of foreign ministry officials. I met Press TV officials. I met university professors. This was big. I was being groomed for a job at Press TV as a reporter. But they just constantly tried to divert me. And in the end, I said, that's it. They gave me phones. They gave me laptops. They gave me tablets. I was in a luxury apartment in northern Tehran near the ski fields. I walked from that. I'm now in a windowless hotel in Kuala Lumpur. I thank God I've had nearly $1,000 in donations, which are keeping me going really well, which I'm really stoked about. But I left a luxury panda bear sugarcane existence in a petting zoo. That's what it was. I was becoming a petting zoo to get out of there. To realize that there's something very strange going on. And that's where I am today. And, you know, life gets crazy. Mm-hmm. Life is crazy.
It's kind of like a virus, how it infects cells. The reason why it spreads through the body so quickly is because just one cell going through the bloodstream will bump into all the other cells around it. And it's all over the place. And then it doesn't matter where you go, wherever there's power, wherever there's control, wherever there's institutions, wherever there's, you know, a great deal of public standing or respect, there they are. There's a little infiltrating scumbaggery mother... You know, it just... And they're of all makes and models. That's what I've found. All kinds of scumbaggery wherever there's power.
Vinny, I'll give you an insight into Iran. The people I was staying with had Iranians in Swiss banking. They're all working in Swiss banking in Zurich. And I believe that the European bankers, the European Jews, a bit more cultured, a bit more sophisticated, most of them are pedophiles and whack jobs. They've got a war running with Netanyahu. Netanyahu's got them all on video. Because he's running all the surveillance by all those Israeli companies, which I talk about. I was invited out for heads of counterterrorism for coffee over this issue. This is big, Inspector Barry Shelton. Iran is doing deals with the European Swiss banking houses. That's what I believe. That's why there's Alfa Romeos and Porsches and luxury cars everywhere. There's cranes everywhere. There's buildings everywhere. If there's sanctions, baby, not doing too much to them. That's all I can say. Mm. Not doing too much.
There's an old saying, if the cheapest watch you sell is worth $1 million, you'll never go out of business.
Nah, look, Switzerland, man, is a little hotbed. We talk about Israel, but I'm not stupid. There's a lot going on in Europe as well. A lot. And like you say, Israel's a big focus. It's the bunker. It's the wolf's lair to me. That's where they go to meet because it's safe. It's like a military camp. But I'm not a fool. It doesn't end so every person who identifies as Jewish disappears off the planet tomorrow. This is not the end of the conspiracy. It will simply be replaced like the Ring of Power, J.R. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings, where they slay the big monster.
It's merely one spoke on the wheel of an impenetrable bicycle wheel.
Yeah, you know? It's organized crime, and the next one takes off. That godfather gets killed, the next one comes up. There may be a little bit, be a little bit saner. It won't be as crazy, but it's like when Stalin died.
We use this term, organised crime, all right? And I recall a conversation that I had with a New Zealand journalist named Ben Vigen, and he talked about how the reason why my coffee's so expensive in Auckland is because of the Chinese triads. And I go, well, how can that be, Ben? How can that be? And he says, well, guess what's been happening? New Zealand allows you to pay $500,000 for instant citizenship if you buy government bonds with it for you and your family. And then when you come in and you start buying up houses and local businesses, they're logged as being bought by citizens. So organised crime went, hey, this is a very good idea. Let's sponsor our own people and get them to come in, buy the local real estate, buy the local businesses. Don't change the names. Just run them as per usual. And eventually we'll have a controlling stake in a large part of the economy. Buy off officials within any of the profits that you've got there and ensure that your children study really, really hard in order to get themselves government jobs so that they can be used by the organisation later as well. And it's like this document, Sidewinder Report, came out quite a number of years ago, I think. It was done by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and Department of Justice of Canada, and they said that up to 80% of downtown Vancouver was triad controlled, and that they had triad presences in all of the ports, every single port in Canada, right? And this report was quashed at the highest levels, okay? So the Prime Minister themselves were in the employ of the triads too, allegedly, right? And only one copy survived.
Look, China is a Zionist invention. Henry Kissinger sent all the manufacturing and heavy industry from America in the early 70s to China. Sidney Rittenberg was an American Jew, a linguist in American military intelligence. Look his book up, The Man Who Stayed Behind. Sidney Rittenberg, he now works with Kissinger and Associates. Rittenberg and Associates are the two biggest lobbyists for China. Okay, you have the entire Roosevelt war cabinet, mostly Jewish, Shlomo Adler, Anna Louise Strong. You've got pictures of them sitting there with Mao, all right? The Sassoon family, Iraqi Jews who did business in China. China was built up by all these Middle Eastern Jewish banking families and other families. People that were the same ones involved in the British East India Trading Company and the Opium Wars. This is history most people don't know. China is a construct of that Zionist globalist plot. That's what it is. And I'm not saying they don't have independent aspirations. They do. Just as Hitler was funded by Wall Street, just as Saddam Hussein was funded by the same people. I mean, Hitler's rise to power and Saddam's are identical. I mean, literally identical. But they both went their own way, and China wants to go their own way. The trouble is they're doing that many closed deals with Israel now. All their infrastructure is Israeli penetrated. The Technion, the premier...
The same dynamic works in reverse as well. Just as the triads are coming here, who are they actually employed by, and which organised crime went to China first and started putting it all out, you know? I mean, the world has been running on drugs and money and power and war and murder and pedophile cults for more than most people realise. And the fact that they're now is essentially... Every single country in the world is showing the exact same symptoms of a country that's infested with scumbaggery at the higher power echelons. And if you want to keep a secret government, you need families involved, you need secret societies involved, you need government involved, and you need the money powers involved, and you need the military involved. And once you've got that little circle...
Military especially.
Yeah, military especially, because let's face facts here. If you want to force somebody to do something that they don't want to do, it's completely unjustifiable, it's really repugnant and everything like that, you need a gun to get them to do it. All right? And that's how you eventually have control over absolutely everything that goes on there. And so if you've got that... Well, under key, law and order, the military, and the money, and the little nice little extremely powerful families who have all the influence on your side, you control everything.
Yep. He who has the guns rules. He who does the surveillance rules. I can be a Supreme Court justice. But if I sign the warrant for the police to investigate someone and the police, and they're working with the police, police go, no, nothing to see here, Your Honour. Who rules? The police rule. The people with the guns rule. And it's the military intelligence. You've got to understand, the CIA is a nothing. It's military intelligence. They do the killing. They've got the access to the special forces, serving and retired.
They've got the, human trafficking going, you know, C-130 Hercules. Do you have any idea how many underage children you can fit in one of those?
Yeah, look, who remembers Fletcher Prouty, who Mr. X, if you remember the movie JFK, Donald Sutherland, it's a Donald Sutherland character where he plays Mr. X, well, Colonel X. Well, that's Fletcher Prouty, Prouty. And he was instrumental, and as he says, he was the liaison between the Air Force and the CIA. He would get the aircraft. So most of these people are all military intelligence connected. Look, I know guys in Commando Regiment. Half the bikies, all right, are ex-military. All right, most of the bikie group's senior members and presidents are either working for the police or undercover police, usually ex-army, special forces. I'm giving you some lowdown.
I just recently got that JFK thing, and there was a scene when Joe Pesci was like, you never get out of the agency, all right? It's a family, okay? And it's just like organized crime. Again, once you're in, you never get out, and I think that's
why. It's identical.
People question this. I hear this question all the time, Brendan. How can they keep that big of a secret where somebody would tell? Yes, a lot of people try and they get freaking killed, okay? They get stalked, they get shut up. Nobody believes them, they get discredited and so on and so forth. And if that doesn't work, it's more the fact that they're part of a family and they know that they've got dirt on them and they know the consequences of freaking talking out. I mean, just like if you're working for a company and you've got a non-disclosure agreement, you're not allowed to tell anybody about this death ray that we're building, son, all right? Otherwise, it's national security and you're going to go to Guantanamo Bay for the rest of your life and hum chimichimichanga in your sleep, all right? In order to have any kind of semblance of music, because there will be nothing but ABBA.
There's nothing wrong with ABBA, man.
On repeat, forever, you might start to have a little bit of a problem.
On repeat, forever might be difficult.
See, that's what I'm talking about. We don't do things by halves at Guantanamo Bay. You know, it's a full service.
It's carrot and the stick, Vinny. Carrot and the stick. Someone up. Listen, people said, you're a hero, Brandon. You've stood tall. Listen, if I went back in time, I'd take them. Look, I had Neil come to me. First name Neil. Ex-military intelligence, Army Reserve, barrister, and degrees in chemistry. He's got a mine site. So I'm 6 months into my sentence at Acacia Prison. He comes in, Brandon. He's also a Freemason, but he's a good guy. Most of the Freemasons, I've met a lot of them. They're nice people. They are not pedophiles. They're not, yeah. All right.
Four personal friends who are Masons, you know.
Yes, and they will look, Brandon, it's not like that. There are bad ones and there's good ones and there's bad, you know, but we're this and the Jews stole all this sacred stuff and blah, 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 whatever. Neil comes to me, I'll give you an example. And he says, Brendan, I'm just back from China. I was meeting with Chinese intelligence. There's all retired Australian federal police officers there, and we're forming close personal relationships with miners. I was just offered $30 million for my plot, but I want $130 million. Brendan, I beg you, just be quiet, relax, go into self-care, okay? You'll be looked after. Quote, June 2011. I looked Neil in the eye and I frowned and I went, Neil, what's happening with the appeal? That was my reply. That's how dumb I am. What I should have said was, Neil, what's my numbered Swiss bank account? Put the million in and I'm your man. That's what I wish I'd said. And if I could go back in time, I probably would have, well, obviously I was too stupid. But that is, there are so many things, Vinny, I haven't told because people are not going to believe it. They're not going to believe it. I was sitting there. It was an international incident. Man, I've got, you know, Inspector Barry Shelton emailing me. I'm sending him private correspondence, handing it to the guard at the front gate at counterterrorism at the end of Peninsula Road in Maylands, which wasn't far from the house. I was walking along the river and I was giving them sealed documents. Here's how it works, Barry. All right. So what does Barry do? I have a fight with his underlings, Detective Timothy Richard Payne, a corrupt copper out of the drug squad who's implicated in the theft of 22 kilos of methamphetamine from the Jameson Santos case. The whole drug squad get transferred from there to counterterrorism. Brandon Shortland, frolicking naked with two hookers in the bell tower pool, high as a kite, kicked out of the drug squad, put into counterterrorism. He's now the police union head, would you believe? This is what, it's all jobs for the boys. So I go down and I have a fight with Barry and said, your dogs are out of control, Barry. If you don't sort it out, there's going to be trouble. And Barry says, I apologise, Brendan, there was a misunderstanding. I'm coming back in 2 weeks from a conference in Melbourne, and that was when Hillary Clinton was there. It was a counter-terrorism conference. We all respect your work, quote, we all respect your work. We're going to sort this out. We'll have a coffee. This is the level it was operating at. And you've got to understand, Vinny, one of the supervisors came to me and said these exact words, quote, Brendan, don't worry about the harassment. Just focus on winning the case. We're the arresting detectives. We have a conflict of interest, but we want to talk to you about what you write about. Now, at that stage, I was getting hammered. My friend in the US, a registered nurse, was getting hammered. Her nickname online was Miss America. She's a famous poster off Liberty Forum, some of the big forums from years ago. And I just went, dude, I want the harassment to stop. I was also threatened previously by his underling. And I'm really sorry, Vinny, but I just forgot what I was going to say. And I'm glad because I will get lost down the rabbit hole of all the things that have happened. The point was, he said, where do you get all this stuff from, information? That's what he said. And I, with all my power, with all my strength, I had to not be really sarcastic. And I just went, Google, YouTube, and Fox News. And he was like, oh, open source. I said, yeah, open source. Just, you know, have you heard of Google? And I stopped myself. Are you counterterrorism? Are you professional in your job? Anyway, on that alone, give them credit. They took it seriously. They watched all my videos. And tell me their favorite video. The favorite video was Kay Griggs Talks. They were blown away. Kay Griggs Talks. It's a shame, Vinny. I have to accept some responsibility. I could have done a lot more. But once my back was up, once he threatened me and said, when this court case is over, it won't be over, it was on. It was on for young and old. And, yeah, sorry. It's a rabbit hole. I could go down 50 rabbit holes on what went on.
Well, you're operating at this kind of higher level and you still didn't have any idea, just kind of like bumbling into it naive-like.
But it was a joke. I just kept saying to my mate, this is hilarious. Look at them. What a bunch of bumbling fools. All these $120,000 a year professionals, and they're asking me. They told me to go and do a counterterrorism course. Brendan, get off the internet. You're way above that. Go and do a counterterrorism course. Well, I applied, and I was welcomed by Dr. Samuel Mackinder personally, and then I got a letter stating that I was not a fit and proper person to attend the university. Well, so I can't get work.
That's what Australians call a Mackinder surprise.
Well, you know, I think the gentleman might be part of a certain slash ethnic slash religious community of Perth, Murdoch University.
Doesn't mean anything to me, bro. You'll have to explain this Murdoch University. You know, nothing to do with the A-team, I take it.
Oh.
Or did they teach you to be slightly crazier than Murdoch?
Oh, shit.
Wrong tangent.
It's crazy. The whole thing's crazy. It's Homer Simpson when he spills his coffee onto the console and suddenly the lights are flashing. Everyone's going crazy.
Now, did you get that same thing in court where they're like, no, we're not going to record this part. No, you're not allowed to hear that piece of evidence part. You're going to have to reorganize it all.
Wisby was literally leaning over with his hand up like this. Ready to bash the table. That was something else. I've got up a third of the video on hidden camera footage. I have two-thirds of it on audio. It took me 5 years to correct the audio. The transcript is whole passages missing. Unbelievable. I've got the proof, but I'm overwhelmed. It's going to take years to get it all down. I've got archive footage like you wouldn't believe of stuff. This is why they've kept at me, Vinny. They've kept at me because they want me unstable, constantly homeless. I've been constantly homeless the whole time. Constantly raided by police. I haven't helped, admittedly, but what do you do? You're alone. I couldn't get any help in redneck WA, and I mean, it is redneck land in a fundamental way. It's full of South African Jews. We're very close to Israel, South African intelligence, South African special forces. There's British MI6, MI5 retired there. I met protected witnesses, high-level protected witnesses are held in Perth. James Bulger is there. That is James Bulger, the guy that recently killed another kid. The guy that killed the railway tracks, took the little two-year-old away. He's down there. Tony Sammy, real name Tufik Ali Sorora, S-O-U-R-O-U-R. He bought in the he ran STT Travel out of New York, 14 offices. He bought in the first World Trade Center bomber, and he also bought in Muhammad Atta and met with him several times. I met him in jail. I've got, and Daniel Hopsicker of Mad Cow News, who's done a lot of the research on this, wrote the book Barry and the Boys, confirmed, yeah, it's him. He's the real deal. And lo and behold, would you believe the blind sheikh, the first World Trade Center bomber, died last week? Miraculously, as I start pushing that statement by Tufik Ali Sorora, just a coincidence, I'm sure. Mm. But that's the crazy stuff that's been going on. They stuck me in that jail, and I met the highest of high-level people. I met Roger Reeves, the man who employed, how's this for synchronicity, the man who employed Barry Seal, the infamous Iran-Contra operative. All right, was Roger Reeves, and I met him in a WA jail. One ton of cocaine, I became good friends. I got his book published, Smuggler, a Roger Reeves, a memoir. I did a video for him, which is online. Incredible who I met and the things he told me about how things worked. And Brendan, we paid everyone off, everybody. You know, what would happen is occasionally a new mob would come in and we'd lose our contacts and they'd snatch a few of us and then we'd get back onto the... I mean, it was just... Oh, Vinny, where do I begin? Where do I begin? I don't even know where to begin.
If you don't know where to begin, you know, where are you going to end?
It's like, I need a therapist, I tell you.
I've found it's like there's this long-form thing where you actually talk yourself out and you're like, oh, man, I finally got that off my chest, bro. I've been holding it inside for like 20 years, man.
It's a bit like that. It's a bit like that. But, I mean, you know what I love about you, I'm reading your bio. Look how far you've come. And I say to people, you want to be inspired. Well, look at me. I'm still here. You know, they can't kill everyone. I've met some good people along the way. Look, I've been protected. There's good people, military, police, intelligence services. They want this stuff out there. There's good people along the way. They were begging me to be quiet. Get to the high court, Brendan. Please calm down. Please be quiet. I was losing the plot at one stage. And I look at you. Look at you now. You started with nothing. So if you want inspiration, I'm still here. Vinny's still there. Look at the effect you're having on stuff. Because people say, oh, what's the point? I said, look, it doesn't matter whether we win or lose. What's important is that you fight on the way down. That's where I come from. And there's, you know, for me personally, and I presume for you, the chance of a normal job is probably out. Would that be correct?
Yeah, well, it's not like the chance normal isn't job. There. I could make any bunch of corrupt scumbags a hell of a lot of money. And make a hell of a lot of money myself. The problem is, my conscience won't let me. My body won't let me. As soon as the thought or the reality hits me that, oh, you have to get up in the morning and get stuck in traffic with the rest of the wage slaves and go and do something that you hate in order to get money to buy shit you don't need, then I start to breathe really, really fast and start to have a bit of a panic attack. Like the idea, I call it employophobia, or like a fear of gainful employment. So,
I know the feeling.
What do you do? Well, you be yourself, and you work with people, and you never work for anyone ever again.
But it's hard. It's a hard road. It's not easy to let go and go out on your own. It's not easy.
Yeah, I recall Michael Rupert. It was the first conspiracy documentary thing that I ever saw called Truth and Lies of 9/11. And I saw a recent documentary with him before he committed suicide.
Oh, Mike Rupert.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
FromTheWilderness.com. And he was very, very sad because of what the Justice Department and the CIA and all of these other agencies have been doing to him, the same thing that they've been doing to you. And he was talking about the Native American scouts and how their blade was shaped differently from everybody else. Everybody else had a sharp blade on one side. It was just for cutting, it was for eating, it was for utilitarian uses. But a scout, the one who actually finds the path where no others fear to tread, his blade cuts both ways because he needs to be able to defend himself as well as find his way. Mm. And that loneliness, I think, when you don't feel like there's help there, where you don't feel like there's an end to it, when you're just at that point of desperation, of giving up or whatever, then something happens to just show you, no, you got to keep going, bro. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you need $500 to pay your rent and what have you, and you don't have $500, and all of a sudden, there it is.
Yeah, and people are willing to help. You just have to ask. I'd refuse to ask. I got a big $8,000 US donation at one stage, and that police raided me the next day and banned me from possessing technology. And I bought green screens. I bought cameras. A friend, Louis, in Iraqi, he was going to come over. I thought, oh, this will be over in a few weeks. The lawyer said the charges are ridiculous. Don't worry about it. So I spent all this money, made a documentary, went to Canberra, met the Iranian ambassador in the consulate, and they dragged it out for over 2 years. And that's when I had to leave. In the end, I realized they are never going to get their claws out of me. Mm. They're just never going to let me get on the street. And like you say, all of a sudden, just when you were low, and I was pretty low when I came back from Iran, I tell you, I was the lowest I've ever been in this little windowless tomb called a hotel room. But I asked for help. People said, Brendan, ask for help. You're so arrogant and proud. Just ask for help. And man, people came pouring in, $1,000 Australian in just 2 weeks. I mean, you just got to ask, and people will turn up. In fact, sometimes you don't even have to ask. Mm. They just appear. And, you know, I don't want to push Christianity or being a believer or God, whatever you believe in, synchronicity, an acausal connecting principle, linked through time and space, whatever you want to believe, the creator, whatever,
luck, a holographic fractal representation of collective whatever. Consciousness co-creating itself, whatever. No, just whatever it is.
Yeah, it's just amazing. It's just amazing. It just turns up and you go, wow, it's like there is something guiding my life. Come, Brendan, don't give up. Keep going. I said, I've had enough. Ah, I can't do this anymore. And yeah, that's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me going.
When I came here in 2016, there was this bit that he played from the psychiatrist. And it was a study into the reptilian brain, the lower part that governs your fight or flight responses. And he said that what the difference is between really exceptional people and really ordinary people is that really exceptional people ignore what their reptilian brain tells them to do. What does a reptilian brain say? It says, don't stick out. No, 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 people will think you're stupid. No, 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 don't say that. They'll try and attack you. It's overly cautious, and it wants to fit in, and it wants to survive, and it wants to not appear any different to anything else. And so he said, if you want to be an exceptional person, whenever your reptilian brain is whispering to you, ignore it.
Freedom from fear. And look, Vinny, on that note, keeping you in an anxious state is one of their major psychological warfare operations. They must keep you in an anxious state. And the key with good psychological warfare is you don't even realize you're in an anxious state. All you feel is helpless. And when you get an idea, you go, oh, what's the point? There's no point. Oh, I'll write a letter. O'Connell says write a letter to the minister. No, oh, what's the point? That is the state they're keeping you in. Anxious. It's always a slight anxiety, and the higher the anxiety, the better, because what it does, it prevents you thinking clearly and acting in a positive way.
Mm.
And that's why I had to realize that I'd been warfared, psychologically warfared, into an anxious state. I couldn't think clearly. And it took someone recently to say, Brendan, you have got to snap out of your belligerence, your anger, your anxiety, and admit that you need help and admit you've been traumatized. And I hate to use that word when I'm looking at dead Palestinian kids and dead Syrians all day and dead Iraqis. That's trauma too. But I have in my own way, and I had to take a deep freaking breath and a really long hard look at myself and realize it's that anxiety that was killing me and refusal to ask for help. And if people can just break free of that, and it's hard, Vinny. People have got mortgages. That's why they invented the mortgage, the 30-year mortgage. How many people have said to me, Brendan, I want to help, but I've got a mortgage. I've got kids to send to school.
In Latin,
you're single. It's easy for you.
In Latin, mort as in mortality, death, and gage as in grip. So a mortgage is a death grip.
Or contract. In French, it's contract, yeah. A contract unto death.
Yeah.
Then that's the first thing I say to people. Start a political party and nationalise the banks. You'll be voted in tomorrow. Nationalise the banks.
Oh, no, no, no. You'll have a propaganda campaign launched against you starting tomorrow. Like, in fact, it'll start immediately.
What was it Kennedy was doing again? Kennedy was doing something with the Federal
Reserve. Well,
Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. All the backed-up currency. What was it? Carlin was saying, all these people are saying, try to live peacefully, and then BAM! Right in the fucking head. Yeah. Apparently we're not ready for that. It's getting down to this point where we're so afraid of getting assassinated for doing what we're doing. And you don't realise that although there's these all-powerful, overwhelming forces that are beset against us, there are so many of these very powerful, totally unseen forces that are behind us, right? Like, I was actually genuinely surprised at how many people just kept asking me. It was almost like I was getting nagged by a partner of some description. When are you coming back on the show? When's a live show coming on? When's it going on? It's like, oh my God, there's actually that much need out there for the lighter side of genocide. Because, look, sure, we're targeted individuals, we have very stressful lifestyles, there's a brutal cabal of criminal sociopathic scumbaggery that are poisoning the water, air and food supply and control all the media and whatnot, but what are you worried about, bro? Like, seriously, just chill out, man. Stop taking it so seriously. Because the worst thing, or the greatest realization I think I had, is that stress causes illness. And so the more you worry about the things that are causing illnesses within society or damaging you or whatever, the more you think and worry about it, the more of those diseases you eventually suffer from. So if you're very, very worried about the end of the world, the likelihood is you'll get so worried about it that you'll have a heart attack and die before the world ends.
Yeah. And what's more, you become powerless. You get anxious and you become powerless. And you're right. That's why I loved your website, because of the humor. You've got to have humor. You've got to laugh. I could not have survived without my sense of humor. I would roll on the ground in laughter. Brendan O'Connell, and people said to me, Brendan, you've got to have a suit for court. I said, no. I'm not getting a suit. I'm wearing my blue floppy hat, my sunnies, my daggy T-shirt, my shorts, and my sandals, because I want the Israeli state to know I'm kicking their ass and I'm an unemployed bum, West Australian larrikin, idiot, ex-surfer, pot grower from Perth. And I want the people to know I'm kicking their ass all by myself, fundamentally. Of course, we're never by ourselves totally. Mm-hmm. And you're right, you've got to have humour and you've got to play it up. You've got to use whatever you've got and remember that there are people in positions. But I guarantee you, Vinny, there's people in New Zealand intelligence listening to you. There's people in Australian intelligence and policing listening to you. They're human beings. They pay mortgages. They know what's going on. They know. And I even got a reply from Margaret Pugh, one of your MPs, yesterday, saying, yeah, good on you, Brent, or whatever it was. It's good that Senator Minister Chris Finlayson got back to you. That's the head of New Zealand intelligence and the Attorney General. He got back to me and said, thank you for sending me this information on Israeli intelligence. And look at New Zealand, for crying out loud. Little old New Zealand is the number one state kicking Israel's ass. How good is that? It's hilarious.
Why would you say that? During the Christchurch earthquake, a whole bunch of Israeli spies with a bunch of fake New Zealand passports, because New Zealand passports are really sought after, because really, think about it, when you're coming through a checkpoint and a thing, who's a security risk? Who's a security risk? Oh, it's a person from New Zealand. Go through, mate. Go through. Everybody loves it.
Just protect the sheep. Protect the sheep. Sorry, I had to throw in a Kiwi joke.
And our Prime Minister, high-level Freemason and also Orthodox Jew, just says, no investigation into all of these people.
Stop right, Vinny, please, stop right there. Is the Prime Minister an Orthodox Jew?
He was.
But he's not.
Until he stepped down in the same year that New Zealand started to become under investigation for corrupt money laundering schemes and things,
things of that nature. I had no idea. Please, later on, email me that as much info you got. I'll look into that.
Oh, mate, I could talk to you for years. Like, literally, I covered... Look, did this. This is my first year of not having John Key, the ex-Wall Street banker Freemason, as my Prime Minister in terms of being the radio, right? Oh, my God. It has a whole different vibe, bro, because the person that they've got to replace him as the New Zealand Prime Minister has been his Deputy Prime Minister for that entire 8 years. You know, everything's going in a totally freaking different direction now, isn't it? It's going so different. And anyway, I'm sorry, Brendan, we're coming to break now. Ladies and gentlemen, go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and donate through the Patreon and the PayPal and the Kiwi Bank and the so on and so forth, so that we can keep bringing you the wonderful people from around the world that have had a whole bunch of trauma experiences to traumatize you too. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go changing that dial. It's electrified. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. I'm Vinny Eastwood. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. And my very special guest joining us for the second hour, as well, who can't stop from grinning, it's Brendan O'Connell, the Australian exile. And did you ever dig the irony, Brendan, that normally when people get persecuted, they get sent to Australia, but you're already there and you can't go back?
Really, it's crazy. In 2011, I'm assessed by Professor Dr. Guy Hall, forensic psychologist, for propensity to violence at Acacia Prison, because the head of Acacia Security, Serco Security, was Bill Bosch, who's former South African in intelligence, which I found out. So I couldn't help myself. He was opening my mail to my lawyer, and I said, Bill, don't open my F-word mail. Brendan, he said, I have full authority to do whatever I like, basically. So I saw him with some of the Aboriginal elders, the Indigenous elders. I said, hey, Bill, I hear you were South African intelligence at one stage. I'm just curious, did you ever sign off on any death warrants of black activists when you were in South African intelligence? And he just looked at me like this, and the next minute I'm getting shanghaied to Casuarina Prison Management Unit and being told that, will you leave the state? If you leave the state, you know. And I just went, what? You're offering me exile? Man, this is East German Stasi, this is Russia, this is Soviet. I can't believe this. I couldn't believe it. So, I mean, they will offer that to people. We'll let you out if you bugger off interstate. And I thought, no way, I'm staying right here. I'm going to be a thorn in your flesh, a burdensome stone, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I just thought, I can't believe this is happening. But as I found out, they do it to a lot of people. A lot of people take it.
Just a fly in the ointment, Hans. A pain in the ass. A monkey in the wrench.
The thing in the punch bowl. The thing in the punch bowl.
Well, just thinking about this this concept of the action movie Die Hard and what a huge impact it had on the culture at the time. You know, this enormous, huge, frickin' phenomenon of a film, which everything has tried to replicate since. Why did it do that? It's because, like every good story about a hero, it's about somebody who's ordinary, who goes through something extraordinary and changes and learns something about themselves, and then comes back and rekindles and rebuilds things, right? It's the arc of virtually every story that's ever been told. And I started to think about this concept, about what if there's actually a connection between legends and myths and real life, if there's a connection between storytelling and fiction with the real world. What if everybody's going through their own little hero quest? It's just that some films are a lot more hard-paced than others.
Yeah, very true. They're all archetypal. You know, it's like good old Star Wars, you know, the ultimate hero quest, which was virtually co-written with Joseph Campbell, the famous mythologist. And I know that George Lucas is a member of the Jungian Society. I mean, if you tweak those archetypal patterns like he did deliberately, obviously you end up with a classic. But, you know, like you said, this is happening all over the world. You know, there are people going through all sorts of things, whether it's crazy stuff in the Middle East or just whistleblowers in Australia, whistleblowers in America you're not hearing of. I mean, you hear of Sibel Edmonds, a famous whistleblower, but what about the 10 others and the NSA people who aren't Edward Snowden or aren't Julian Assange, who are in jail for life for releasing material, and we're not even hearing about them? There's these hero journeys on everywhere, Vinnie, and we remember Braveheart, probably my favourite film ever, how, you know, everyone identifies with Braveheart. Every man wants to be the hero. Every man wants to defend the women and children and stand for justice and overcome overwhelming odds. And I say to people over and again, did you identify with William Wallace? Oh, yes. I said, the joke is, you're not William Wallace. You're the guy that sold out for the land. You're the guy that did that, and the sooner you realise that, the better. Because the trouble is, too many people are identifying and not realising their true position, which is pathetic, sold-out peasant, for various reasons. And I have to tell you, Vinny, some of my biggest supporters have been people who said, I have no interest in your subject, Brendan. I just want to get laid. I just want to party. But you know what? The ironic thing, they admit it. They admit they're scared. And yet they're my biggest supporters. They're the people who've never let me down. But the heroes, the people that talk the big talk, the people who threw their fists in the air and said that the beer and the wine pizza a night. We're with you, Brendan. They were the worst, the most useless, the most sold out, the most scared. They ran like rabbits. And, you know, when I watch Braveheart, I just think, yep, that's pretty much how it ends up. And I don't want that to be me, but I don't know how else to call it. I want to be positive. But I think if people just admit they're scared, admit they've got a mortgage, and admit, look, Brendan, I can't do much, but I'll do this, I think that's a lot better. The moment I see someone pumping their fist in the air saying, I'm willing to die, Brendan, I just go, yeah, whatever, just go away.
Mm.
You're not.
Well, that gets to the point of the part of the story that they call the trial and the realization of the hero. It's actually about three quarters of the way through the classic story of the hero, where he starts to realize his own power and he actually starts to use that new acquainted power, and it becomes his new life. And the end of the story is when he's simply now living his new life. He's gone through his journey and now this is his new reality with all of the lessons he's learned incorporated with it. And I was just like, holy cow, I passed that point a couple of years ago. Awesome. I'm already at the end of my story. And it was really, really nailed home for me when I was driving down the road and my radio's broken in the car, so I have to think. When I'm driving, and I go, what do I want to achieve before I die? Or what do I want to achieve after I die, rather? You know what? What I want to achieve is somebody who, like, saved a lot of lives, or did, like, a hell of a lot of good things, or devoted themselves really, really compassionately to a good cause of some description, who would say something along the lines of, at my funeral, you know, there was this time when I was in really, really dark, dire straits, all right, and I thought I was giving up everything. But then there was this guy, Vinnie Eastwood, who turned up. He taught me about the lighter side of genocide, and he really reinvigorated me. And I went back to doing a whole bunch of stuff, and I wrote some books, and I went on a hunger strike, and so on and so forth. And then the very next day, I think a guy named Kevin Galilee, who's written like five books or something like that on depopulation, said almost word for word what I'd thought would be a great thing to accomplish before or after I'm dead. And it pissed me off because I was like, damn it, I've already achieved everything I had to in life. What do I do now?
Well, you're doing what you love. Number one is doing what you love. I mean, if you can do what you love, I mean, there it is. You're already there. And you've done it, like you said. You built yourself up from nothing. From nothing. And I think that's an inspiration, to that you can make a difference. And, yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, let's...
And humour. Like you said, humour's so important. Humour.
Well, can I ask you, if there was a particular point where something really, really terrible happened, but you actually made a joke out of it and it turned out to be one of the better ones? All right, just sit that on your noodle for a moment and see if something comes up, because I want to change the subject and switch gears a little bit. Get into something a little bit serious here, okay, because... came across this realization through talking to a number of very educated people on the show about Freemasonry and the Talmud and the Orthodox Judaism and how these things are actually interconnected with the intelligence community and organized crime, and thusly they've actually managed to become the shadow government with what's it called, the Black Nobility. Right, so once you understand that very, very simple structure about how every country's got an intelligence agency, every country's got secret societies, and everybody's got a whole bunch of these intermingled power brokers and things of that nature that are in very important positions and sort of run things. So it sort of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, it's just multi-layered, and I guess Illuminati is not a bad way to see it. Somebody's at the top and it filters down. I mean, you know, police are very important, obviously. Their organized crime connections are very important. The mental illness, people in the psychiatric facilities who are well known to police and community, they're very important. They do all sorts of jobs for the police, very important, because they're mentally ill. They can say, oh, I met the police commissioner at this house and he gave me the orders to stalk and kill the baby. And of course people go, of course you did, with your long history of schizophrenic. That's just why the mental ill are very important as well in their little scams. But it flows right down. If you look at a Freemason ritual and look at the rituals of bikies, look at what the bikies wear, senior members and the president, their little clothes and stuff, it's identical to Freemasonry. In fact, Paul Jarrett, senior prison officer, was sacked from Casuarina prison because he was bringing in meth, ecstasy and steroids for Troy McCanty and his offsider Bam Bam in the Finks. Bam Bam had his throat cut in the end, And apparently Troy McCanty's a walking dead man. Now, McCanty's the most notorious bikie in Australia. He's a private school kid. Now, what's the connection? Well, Troy McCanty's father is a high-level Freemason. A high-level Freemason. Guess who the Master Mason of Perth is? Inspector Steve Jancic. Retired. And when I outed him in August of 2014, he retired that month, where I stood out the front of the Perth District Court with the pyramid on the front going, what's this? And he's on the front page of the West Australian.
Well,
can you see the links? Bikies, Freemasonry, banking, finance, private school kids. What are these private school kids doing joining bikie gangs? That used to be the old days, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. You were brought up in an orphanage, probably joined the military, beaten and bashed, go through the prison system as an adolescent. You know, I've met some of these guys. They are great people. I mean, obviously done some bad things. But this new mob, these private school kids joining bikie clubs, it's a business now, and it's run by the police and Freemasonry. And ultimately above them is my favourite people, all the way to the Wolf's Lair, all the way to the Wolf's Lair and into London, City of London banking, Wall Street, Germany and the banking system in Germany and Switzerland. That's where you'll end up.
And so Deep Throat said, follow the money, right?
Follow the money.
Now, follow the money. Dig this. New Zealand Prime Minister John Key used to be the head of the derivatives trade for the Federal Reserve Bank of New York before coming to New Zealand and becoming our Prime Minister out of the blue, right? And then he steps down.
Man, am I out of touch or what?
And then he steps down.
I don't know nothing about this. I'm still
from New Zealand Prime Ministership in December of 2016. And then a day or two, and he says, oh, for my family, it's just time or whatever. And then a day or two later, an article comes out in the paper that's saying that the head of the IMF and Barack Obama had both given their signature and okay for John Key to become the new head of the IMF. And then something clicked. Whoa. He got us $100 billion in debt. That's 4 million people, $100 billion in debt. And who's the central bank of central banks of the world? The IMF. Right, to oversee the receivership,
isn't it? Scam.
And it's the same.
If you were CEO of a company and you did that, you'd be jailed for negligence and fraud.
Well, one can only hope.
They're just scamming us for fun. It's like the flat Earth theory, you know. I can just see these dorks, these Edward Snowden types in the NSA going, "I bet you $50." It's at lunchtime. I bet you $50 I can get these clowns to start debating flat Earth. They must sit there all day just coming up with stuff just to make us look like absolute fools, I swear.
You know, actually, this gives me a very good idea, right? It's actually something stolen from Carlin's idea, but what if we actually did start taking bets on what we could get people to believe, you know, and actually start making
money? I was going to start a website, but make it really serious. Oh, just to do that, then at the end go, ha-ha, you dumb fool.
Yeah.
Just conjo.
Like, for example, if you subscribe for X amount of money a month, we take it off you and give you fake news.
I know somebody's already done that. Alex Jones has already done
that. Oh, damn, you already beat me to it.
No, I didn't mean
that. Now,
million dollars a year later.
I got that kind of vibe as well, like, oh my God, Thank you, American Freedom Radio. Thank Denny Romero. Sweet mercy. I looked for a long time. Like, American Freedom Radio went down for a period of time, right? And I was just like, trying to look for something that had, like, quality hosts and, like, good information and, like, a decent amount of time to talk and didn't keep getting interrupted by ad breaks that wasn't all about God and guns and gold and all of that kind of stuff. And it was just like, oh, my God, there was nothing. And now American Freedom Radio's back. And it's like, if you've been holding in a piss for a very, very, very long time to the point where it's actually starting to hurt, and that even when you're halfway done pissing it out, it still hurts. You know, it was that kind of hurt, that kind of absolute need for a network that was actually fun to listen to, that didn't take our extermination that seriously, that you had to like micromanage what everybody said and interrupt every single freaking conversation all the time with advertising. Repeating yourself. Oh, it hurt me in my brain places. It did. I tried to listen to other radio networks. I did. I tried. I failed. I was just a bad person. This is what I've just gotten used to, you know. And once you've gotten used to the best, why settle for something else, you know?
Yeah, but Vinny, I've got one, only one thing to say, mate, and that's don't give up your guns.
Yeah, I always found the irony about somebody on an alternative media radio network that exposes the military-industrial complex, who then fans the flames of gun grabbing, for which there's no... and then they go out and rush out and buy a whole bunch of guns, which benefit the military-industrial complex. Right? I was just thinking this sort of thing. My friend Jonathan Eisen, who edits Uncensored magazine, he said, he's a Judas goat, man. He's a New York Jew, you know. And he goes, what the Muslims do is they get a goat and they treat him better than all the rest of the goats to lead the herd, all right? And the herd respects him and they follow him. And then, when the time comes to slaughter him, the Judas goat walks into the corral, everybody follows him, and then he walks out and the gate gets closed behind him. The Judas goat, man. That's what he's there for.
That's what they do. They used to train cows. I know someone used to do that. They used to train one cow to lead all the other cows into the thing. Look, I don't know what Alex Jones is. We can talk about him forever. And I don't want to give him too much airtime. But look, I learned a lot from Alex Jones. But you know what? It's just time to put your canoe in the river and paddle another canoe. That's all. I can just move on. And, you know, but, you know, $70 million a year, man, that's good money. It's good money. That's how much he's making a year, I mean, before cost. But anyway, that's why I'm loving the new breed that are coming up with his you know. There's always a replacement. We shouldn't chill. We should chill and just know there's always going to be a replacement too. You know, what he won't say, others will say.
Mm. Every part of the body replaces itself every 7 years. So nothing ever stays the same. Everything's renewing itself. Everything's always changing. And that's the way things should be.
Yeah, well, you're also sitting in a hot spot there too, just to point out, New Zealand and Australia and Tasmania, number one places. Number one places now. So as things unfold over the next 10 years, assuming we're still going to be here in 10 years, and not a glowing pile of glowing ash, New Zealand, Tasmania, Australia, and particularly Perth. Perth will be the new Sydney. In fact, it's going to be, in 50 years, it'll be the New York of the Asia Pacific. So we are sitting right in amongst, assuming this is still a long battle to go, another 50 to 70 year battle, long term. We are sitting in the hub. You're sitting there, well, God willing, one day maybe going to be sitting back in Perth. There's a lot of stuff going on in New Zealand. I've heard Robert De Niro's in WA. Ray Kroc from McDonald's has got large holdings. He's dead now. I've heard Bill Gates is in Western Australia. I've heard all sorts. Condoleezza Rice has an apartment in Western Australia. That's what I've heard. I've heard all sorts of things are going on. So we're sitting in the hub down under.
Well, we're talking about a state that only has, like, what? 2 million people in it or something like that.
2.5 million people and 1.8 million or 2.2 million are in Perth.
Yeah. Right. So there you go. If you want to have a place that is really, really easily controlled, have a very small and undiverse population spread across a really, really large area. You'll be surprised how easy it is to have centres of control that wind up making the whole place your bitch.
Look, they got B-2 bombers landing in WA. They've got an Area 51 area. I heard this years ago from my Air Force friends. They've got all sorts of stuff. I've got fishermen friends that will tell me stories about what they've seen at night on the full moons. These things just going straight past them. Huge, translucent stuff, like freaking them out. There's all sorts of things going on in Western Australia. It's got the largest proven oil and gas reserves in the world are in Western Australia, the Kimberley Basin. Who even knows this? The gas fields are 10 times the size of what they're saying. It is a prize. It is a prize. It is the jewel and the crown of the Asia Pacific, sitting directly under 3.5 billion Chinese and Indians waiting to develop. So trust me, the focus is on Australia, particularly West Australia and New Zealand. And New Zealand's like the bunker, where all the really, really rich people go to hang with the hobbits and Gandalf the Grey to smoke their magic pipes. But New Zealand is also a very important place. Very.
Yeah, it's strategically important as well for nuclear missile subs, ladies and gentlemen. There's a giant trench where you can be in the middle of the Pacific up near Hawaii and fire your missiles and ICBMs and then follow this nice trench and come all the way down here in New Zealand, far away from the radiation. And it's been rated on international studies that if the world were to end via nuclear holocaust or something like that, number one on your places to be would be New Zealand to ride it out.
Exactly. And the south coast of Western Australia, down around Esperance. Keep an eye on Esperance, Western Australia, just across from Israelite Bay. On the south coast of Western Australia is another spot. There's bunkers all through there. The US military were there, built up that place, building farms. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on. I know people in oil and gas exploration, mining exploration have said, we've seen crazy stuff. There was one guy from the 70s when they were still dropping messages via rocks. They would wrap a message in a rock and drop it from a Cessna 210 to the guys in the four-wheel drives and the trucks doing the exploration. That's how hard it was. And they just come over a hill. There's all these dune buggies full of Americans going, hey, boys. We're from the University of Texas. We're studying the rare wildflower antelope, bloody koala bear, platypus mating habits in the middle of the Simpson Desert. And they said they had these demountables that you could only have got in by chopper. You could not have just taken a truck in there. And where they got ice cream, air conditioning, I mean, just decked out. Decked out. What the hell were they doing in the 70s, roaming through the West Australian desert? I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in West Australia.
Leonce Keeley, who was actually part of one of a facility near Alice Springs, and he said that they had this giant underground facility where you actually had to have a go-kart because it was actually just so big, these massive rooms of computer banks, that you would kill yourself just going from one room to the other walking, you know, like this is in the 70s.
I believe it, no problem, believe it.
All right, so
you've got to understand Australia is unique. It's so unique. It's stable geographically. It's stable politically. It's stable geology. This is the place to be, and there's no one here.
Yeah, as Steve Hughes said it best, it's 20 million people living in a place the size of Asia. Right? That's no one. You ever seen a queue in Australia? Here I am.
Yep. Yep. Watch out. And the Crown wants it back. The Crown wants it back. Absolutely. Yeah. They know Australia is the prize. They want it back.
Mm.
So there's a bit of a fight going on.
Well, is there not like a secret war going on behind nearly everything, right?
It's I believe it. I believe 100% there's a huge secret war. European metal traders, European Jews banking are fighting with the Israeli Jews, who are fighting with the American Jews, who are fighting with secular Marxist Jews, who are fighting with a bunch of white pedophile crazy people in Europe who are fighting, you know, and on and on and on it goes. There is a huge fight going on, massive fight going on.
Try not to concern yourselves with the personal dealings of very scary people.
That's scary, man.
Contempt for people who have these rose-tinted glasses, who don't actually accept the reality when people are telling them, you know, it's like, hey, 100,000 children go missing in the United States every year. 100,000? Yep. Oh, okay. okay. Right.
Where do they go? Nebraska? Alaska? Where do they go?
Well, they went into the McDonald's burgers probably, bro. You know... What do they do? They test it up and then come up in the lab test with, like, human DNA in it or something like that. I mean, hey, if you owned a giant meat processing plant and you had a lot of dead bodies to get rid of, wouldn't it be the ideal?
The trouble is many ordinary people can't understand how evil it is. I read a book that really woke me up in 2007 called Predator by Anne C. Salter, and she's a forensic psychologist who dealt with predators, sex offenders, and child rapists and murderers. And I just went, man, I had to close my windows at night. I just went, it just snapped me out of it to realize that they're really up. And when I went to jail, I met these people, and they just look at you. Mind you, they were more scared of me than I was of them, because by that stage, I'd woken right up. I'd have no problem putting their head in the toilet and flushing continuously. But they're fundamentally cowards, but they prey off people's naivety. And the balance is to not be too paranoid but not be too naive. You just have to realise that there are nasty, sociopathic, weird people who may have been traumatised themselves as children, but there's also people who haven't been traumatised, and they have no frontal lobe capacity. You know, the CT scans, MRI scans show that they'd have no stimulation in their frontal lobes, which is your higher ethical and moral thinking, which says I and the other are one. I really like to bash that guy on the head, but I'm not going to do it. Or, you know, where you go, yeah, that person's just having a bad day. That's your frontal lobe. And these people don't have one, and particularly when they take all the drugs, the methamphetamine, cocaine, the SSRIs. They remove the frontal lobe capacity and turn you into a very robot. That's the mechanism. So there is a physical mechanism to this, and you can identify that psychopathic, functional psychopathic personality, and they're everywhere. And they, you know, I know a guy, two tours of Vietnam, he's probably killed 100 people, sniper, and he's fine. He's a functional psychopath. He's never killed anyone outside that we know of. Yeah. Throws his family, his kids. He's a functional psychopath.
Yeah, it's what they call, there's a benign narcissist. All psychopaths are narcissists, but not all narcissists are psychopaths. And if you look at the subset of manipulative techniques that these people do, like in the psychology manuals and things like that, psychopaths do this and the gaslighting and so on and so forth, then you have a look at the techniques by which a narcissist manipulates and tries to control people, and they're actually very similar techniques. And then the real scary thing starts to happen when you start to look into government mind control programs, cults that have been set up by intelligence agencies and things like that, and they're the exact same subset of manipulative and controlling techniques and deceptions that are being used to literally brainwash people and then get them to defend their own brainwashing so that the psychopath can then use them as a tool for his own self-gratification, essentially something to feed on without the ability to feel anything really emotionally gratifying like love and self-sustained image without an over-inflated ego. It needs to feed constantly. That's why it has an insatiable appetite, because you cannot fill a cup that has no bottom. Doesn't matter what bad thing you do. Doesn't matter what thrill you get. There is always tomorrow where you need another fix. And that's what they're
totally disconnected from their body. They have no functional feeling side, no compassion, no ability to reflect and go, yeah, I made a mistake, I made a dick of myself. All of that, and on a deeper spiritual level or even physiological level, that right-left hemisphere, the connections are just not there for whatever reason. Maybe it's disassociation. They've been traumatized as children, which happens a lot, very, very planned military intelligence run. But whatever the reason, the sooner people wake up as individuals and understand that there are nasty people out there, you still have to trust, but you need to be awake. And women in particular need to be more masculine, more assertive, and like mother bears, tigress, a lioness. There are vast pedophile rings have been operating for a very long time. It's actually getting better, not worse. We're just hearing more about them. And people need to get into groups. One thing I learned in jail, you need a team, Biddy. You need a team. Well, lone wolves get picked off. You need a team of people working together. And when you do, life becomes easy. That's why, you know, when I look at the success of Jewish communities around the world, we can talk about spiritual stuff and all this, the occult or whatever. But really, at the end of the day, they work as a team. And they keep their dissent and their anger towards each other to themselves, because that's part of their tradition. And that's why they've done so well. So we can look past any esoteric thing for it. They work as a team. Yeah. And they keep everyone in line by fear. There's going to be another holiday.
There's a historical precedent for that kind of behavior as well, because one point the Roman Empire invaded Judea and said to all the Jews, look, guys, you have to worship the emperor as a god. And they're like, no, we're not going to. He goes, all right then, none of you Jews are allowed to own land, and distributed them all around Europe. And so without the ability to own land and really set up a kind of homeland, as it were, they instead, as a culture, became more inclined towards precious metals, rare stones and gems and lore and things of that nature, where you would have a lot of wealth on you and be carried around with you. And I think what happened, just like every single culture, that thing that evolved out of necessity wound up getting manipulated and used by somebody in that culture, by many people within that culture, to control the others and use them for themselves. Just like, they used the best part of you, and they used your great skills and everything that's good about you against you for their own ends.
pretty much. And of course, they were always in survival mode. When you're in a survival mode, it's a bit like women. I've always thought of the Whore of Babylon mounting on the beast, that great picture where she's drunk on power and she's drinking, which is, of course, is unfaithful Israel in the Bible. It is a female. It's feminine. Orthodox Judaism and Jewish power in general, Zionist, globalist domination, is feminine. They're always surviving. They're obviously, like a woman will observe, has to manipulate a man. She can't physically intimidate him, so she has to manipulate him. She has to try and, you know, that old saying in that great movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, where the woman says, "My dear, the man is the head of the house, but the woman is the neck, and we point him in the right direction." And when I look at Judaism and how it has had to survive or feels it has to survive, it walks in, it identifies who's the alpha male, it takes a whole scanning. That's why they're into psychology and psychotherapy, studying human behavior, what they perceive as at a survival level. And that's why they're very good at it. And then you would have a Hufjuden or court Jews, which is the same term as a house nigger. They would use that term, derogatory term. They would suck up to the king. They would lend the king money. And they were being very manipulative in that sense. And so when you understand that's a survival mechanism, and you do that in jail when you're in a hostile environment, you'll quickly ascertain who's the boss, who do I need to suck hold to, who do I have to be polite to, who can I tell to F off. You will very quickly, and in fact, having to run around and be through jail, I've got a new understanding, even a slight empathy and sympathy more for Jewish communities, because they're in constant anxiety, and their masters, their controllers, their case officers, particularly the Israeli case officers who are running each Jewish community, must keep them in a constant state of fear. I mean, when I was sentenced, it was full of the Jewish community, and they were in horror. They were staring at me like it was Adolf Hitler himself on the stand. They went there going, ha, 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 ha. They were there going, oh, God, there he is. Oh, my God. Lock up your daughters. I mean, they are in a constant state of terrified fear. And that is their handlers who are keeping them. And that is Israel's in particular special job. It's like when Napoleon emancipated Jews in France and he got them out of the ghettos. The rabbis were furious. What? Get them out of the ghetto. Get them back in. So the rabbis are always pushing anti-Semitism, always pushing Jewish persecution to get back control of the tribe. Because their natural tendency is just to check out a hot Catholic chick or a hot Buddhist chick or a hot atheist chick and just get on with life. Just go and do something else. And I'll tell you straight to your face that assimilation is their biggest worry, that Jews are just getting a life and leaving. And that's why we're going to have to see a big ramp up of so-called anti-Semitism as soon as possible. And it will be Israel doing it.
Mm. As a great chief Sitting Bull once said, all women are the same color when candle goes out.
Pretty much.
And I think there was a Māori elder in New Zealand as well, Dame Fina Cooper, and he said, if you've got any problems with people of a different race, sort them out in the bedroom. All right, marry each other and that kind of thing, because everybody then becomes so mixed up that everybody becomes one, right? And I found that the reason why a lot of diseases don't spread anymore is because people were interbred, and certain gene codes have resistances to certain diseases and certain ones have anything else. Mm. And that if you don't have any variation in your gene code, then you breed in weakness, right? And I thought that was...
dog breeding? Yeah. The specialist dog breeds and all their problems with hips and mouths and breathing. Yeah. What happens?
Even my sister, she has a thoroughbred, and she's like, yeah, all the thoroughbreds get huge amounts of cancers and tumours and things like that. It's because the things that we believe are pure are actually weak, and the things that we believe are impure, like muddled and so on and so forth, are actually a sign of evolution. Right.
We've been evolving constantly, man. There's no, what am I? People said, oh, you're Irish. Well, I'm Celtic, Anglo-Saxon, Spanish, some Mediterranean, and Native Australian. I mean, my father's mother's mother was straight out of the bush, man. Straight out of the bush, full-blood Aboriginal. So what do you want me to identify as? And if we look into everyone's past, look, I'm a nationalist, but I don't like the term white nationalist. Be a European nationalist. It should be based on values. Mm. I mean, I said to a white nationalist one day, listen, dude, if your daughter came home with a black man who had a PhD, treated her like gold, treated you like gold, or she came home with a white trailer park trash twat, who would you prefer? And he said, I'd take the white trailer park trash. And I thought, man, you people are nuts. Crazy nuts. I thought, where does this ideological component come from? I mean, I don't mind someone. I mean, and where does it end? Do they have a little colour grayscale? Well, like, okay, I'm a white nationalist community. Did they have a little card and they put it up against your face? What happens if I've been in the summer sun and my skin's browner this year? I mean, what's the cutoff point? Southern Italian? Spanish? What?
Well, I was at a party and this guy asked me, so what kind of white person are you? And I go, well, I've never been asked that. Not what kind of person are you, but what kind of white person are you? Well, how many kinds of white people are there, bro? Like, can you give me a categorizable list, bro?
Mungy. And let's face it, racism extends to all races, all religions, you know, black nationalists, white nationalists. I admire those people too. They stand up for what they believe. And I've got friends who are national socialists, very cultured, very, you know, into the arts and whatnot. I'll talk to anyone as long as I don't want to kill niggers and crazy talk like that. But the point is freedom, Vinny, the freedom to marry who we want and do what we want. And I said to people, if you're worried about Europe, it's very simple. It's a choice. No one's forcing your daughter to marry the black guy. No one's forcing them. That's her choice. And you know, that's just the way it is. It's all about freedom. So what can I tell you?
Well, what you can tell you is that it would be a really good idea if we sparked up an artificial migrant crisis that was created in order to get everybody in Europe fighting with each other and paranoid about Muslims and things of that nature taking over while the banking system takes over.
So obvious, man. And I've said to people, look, if a black guy or a brown guy, I don't care whether he's a Muslim or a Swahili witch doctor, if he grabs my girlfriend by the backside, I will break his neck. Not because he's brown, black or Muslim, but because he's grabbed my girlfriend's backside. You have every right to defend your country. But for crying out loud, this was an Israeli-run operation. Yisrael Hassoun, the former head of the Shin Bet, warned in June of 2014 to European diplomats, if you abandon Israel, you will have jihadis in your beds, in your kindergartens and in your shops. Centers. That was an Israeli-run operation, 100%. And all these patriot movements, all these Geert Wilders, you mean the Israeli intelligence asset that lived for 2 years in Israel? Wait a minute, I thought of you patriots were anti-Semites and hated Jews. I never hear the word Jew come out of your mouth. All you do is want to hate Muslims because they're all run at the top levels by Israeli intelligence assets and organized criminal gangs. And the police are running the gangs. When you see them shooting and doing crazy things and grabbing women because they're all off their heads on cocaine and methamphetamine, they're fed this through the police feed it to their criminal informant, whether it's from Africa or whatever group they're in, whatever Muslim group they're in, they feed them the arms, they give them the arms, and their goal is to run around and create chaos, which is why the police are ordered to do nothing. And it's 101, and yet even smart people I know don't seem to get it. Why? Because they're in a state of fear. They're saying, Brendan, I cannot walk in Sweden, in Stockholm, down the street to go into my own damn shopping centre. It's that bad. And I said, look, I understand it, dude, but don't you understand who's doing this? Don't you get it? He doesn't care because he says, mate, I'm just worried about my wife getting
raped. That would be the Stockholm syndrome, bro. Now,
we... Ding dong. Drum roll.
Oh, I kill me.
You were itching. You just couldn't help. You were just sitting there going, oh, I've got to say this one. I've got to say this one.
But there's this other point that we get to here where you think, what was it? Came to that realization that psychopaths, evil people, you know, they exist and they don't think like you. But then I'm coming to this other thing, completely uninformed, brainwashed people over there. They don't think, they've been trained not to. It's not because they're dumb, it's because they're brainwashed. They don't know all of this stuff and they don't think like you either, right? And maybe that's part of the great confusion of mankind is that we can't read each other's heads. Right? We don't know what each other's thinking and we make a whole bunch of assumptions and deductions about what somebody means by what they said. And that inefficiency in communication and the ability to not really sit down and hear something out is a cancer of mankind. And that's why I interview so many different people about so many frickin' different topics. Because at the end of the day, if you're sitting down to watch the news, I can assure you, nothing new will be flashed in front of that screen. The things that are actually newsworthy happen every single day, and it occurs to you when you see them, but if you don't act on it, you've got about maybe 5 to 7 seconds. If you don't act on that thing that you see, hey, you know that iPad is filling your baby's skull with a whole lot of EMF wireless radiation there? No, I didn't know that. Go away, you're a conspiracy theorist. Hey, did you know that fluoride accumulates into your bones and give you brittle bone syndromes? No, go away, you're a conspiracy theorist. You know, you just put up with it, right? You just got to play your part, because every single time you say something, they can't unhear it. and their denial lessens with each blow, like waves on the coast, eventually eroding away even the sturdiest of rocks. Right? Just playing your part. That's a very deep realization that all of us really must come to. And when you come to that realization, ladies and gentlemen, you'll stop listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And that's good, because then you'll start living your own life and doing your own thing and stop spending your time giving attention to other people. Right? Instead of paying attention to your own life. That's the one greatest gift that you could give me as a talk radio show host, is to turn it off and do
on,
it yourself.
Hang on, leaderless resistance. Stop following it. You've got to follow for a while, then you go off on your own. Listen, you know what the police said to me, some of the police and prison officers? They said, Brendan, they're terrified of you. You're charismatic. You get people together and you hit the streets. So they knew my plan. I said, I want the middle class saps. That's my group. I want the middle class saps with the mortgage. They are the ones that will change. And they're not on Facebook. They're too busy. They don't have time for Facebook. They're out on the streets going to their 9-to-5 job, and they were mine. I had banners ready. I had flyers ready, and the cops just crushed me because they do not – they want you in the ghetto, the Facebook ghetto, the YouTube ghetto, thing ghetto. Now, you got to go to the ghetto sometimes, but you know what? You get out on the street. How many people are doing it, Vinny? So few. I don't even know anyone that's out on the street regularly. I remember Mike Delaney used to do it years ago when he did Missing Links till he became a goose stepper. Then we have Zane did it. The old guy used to do some really good stuff. I don't know. Do you know people? I know you used to get on the street. Is there many people out on the streets these days?
I've been doing the streets a bit less lately because I've been focusing on so many different areas of activism, and I want to kind of get sort of like a multimedia aspect to it, so that whenever you're mentioning one thing, it's published across a whole different range of media in a number of different formats and styles simultaneously, so that whenever you strike once, you strike 100 different times from a dozen different directions, right? And that kind of thing is just born out of laziness, right? I can't be bothered sharing all of this stuff and doing all of that, blah, 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 blah. You just come up with a really, really easy way to punch above your weight, all right? It's guerrilla style. You can make 10 men look like 100.
Yeah, well, that's where you are now, but there's still people, there still needs to be people just out there handing out flyers. I said, how do you think women got the vote? How do you think they stopped 11-year-olds being put in loom factories and losing their arms? They didn't have Facebook, ladies and gentlemen, 100 years ago. They didn't have that. They had to get out there with flyers and thingies and promote people and provoke people and get in the face with a camera. That's how you do it. People love that stuff. They love it. And that's why the police just hammered me. They were ordered to hammer me under no circumstances. Let him on the street. None. And I must admit, later on, Detective Justin Robinson, we had a chat. He said, Brendan, I have no problem apologising to you. I have no problem apologising to you. Okay, settle down. And he said, I said, Justin, I have every right to be out on the street. This is a public interest story. This is a national security issue. He said, yep, 100%. You're correct. You have every right. Just please liaise with us. So I highly recommend people do not be put off by Section 18C, whatever you're protesting. Please just liaise with your local state counterterrorism. Just be nice, make contact, and say, look, today I'm going out and I'm handing out flyers. They know now. And I'll give myself a pat on the back several times. Well done, Brendan, because I gave not only the West Australian police but the national police a lot of information they had never had before. They'd never had it before because they'd never dwelled into it, but they had to for my case, and they changed without question. So I urge people to be a little bit friendlier to the police if you can, and just liaise with them, and there won't be any problems. You don't have to worry about being jailed or whatever. Just liaise. I had a
comment today, actually. There was this time when I did a little one-man protest with a big megaphone out in Papakura, north of here. I had a couple of mates with me, that kind of thing. And the comment on the thing was, oh, you were consenting and so on and so forth. You don't know your rights, Vinny, and blah, blah, blah. And I had a very nice 19-minute long conversation with a cop where we had a mutually respectful, exchange, and nobody got arrested and nobody got beaten, and we wound up going home unassailed and made a really, really good video of having a polite conversation with a cop and being nice to them, right? And here's the thing. I find that if you're looking for a fight, you'll find one. If you're looking to make friends, you'll find one. Right, and trust me, having a cop as a friend has its perks. There was one time on, I think it was New Year's, me and the boys, we had like beers in our bag and we were smoking a joint in Myers Park in the middle of Auckland City Central. Not the smartest move I've ever made. And all of a sudden, surely three cops start walking down the hill directly towards us and one of them goes, "Oh, g'day, buddy." And I was like, "You know my name, how many cops do I know?" And it turns out it's the community constable that I used to look after his autistic son for really, really well. Didn't search us, didn't get, just popped us on our way, right?
Do you think the average copper wants to arrest people over pot? Do you know pot is tolerated in Iran, in Tehran? I'm walking along the streets with a lawyer and going, "I can smell pot." He goes, "Oh yeah, they smoke it down there. It's all the student and the artist, and they're all having a little schnog, having a little kiss in the bushes." You know what I mean? Even Iran tolerates marijuana. But, you know, look at America now with the new Sessions. Jeff Sessions, is it? The new Attorney General, whatever he is. You know, they're going to crack down on marijuana again. It's crazy. This is nothing with Trump, man. Let's not get onto Trump. But if he's for real, what the hell? A crackdown on the drugs? We got something very wrong, man.
Got about maybe 8 minutes left in the broadcast, right? And I've been hearing so many people talking about Trump, and there was this cautiously optimistic kind of thing about it, maybe. And then I did 2 minutes of research and Googling into who he appointed into his cabinet: Freemason, Ashkenazi Jew, Goldman Sachs banker, and military industrial complex, juggernauts and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh my God, they're all Trilateral Commission, they're all Council on Foreign Relations, they're all globalists. And the lead anti-globalist in the alternative media with the biggest fucking following is telling everybody to follow this guy and believe everything he says when everything he fucking says is a lie.
Who are you talking about? Who could that be?
I don't want to name any names, but for fuck's sake, just how could you not see through it? You're still in the Hopi changey business, alright? He's not part of a Native American tribe. He's a part of a globalist organization that is coming out there. He's not part of the Hopi changey medicine men, alright? The frustration. Breathe, Vinny. Breathe! The frustration that you get when you realize that other people just kind of don't see it. They don't see that they're being scammed, and you almost see that they're like literally walking towards it.
I understand it though. Even I'm still clinging. I'm still clinging that maybe it's all, he's just playing a game, and once he gets power, once he cleans everyone out, suddenly he's going to like, it's going to be a night of the long knives, and he's going to have a halo as he walks out and glint off his teeth, and we're going to go, "The Messiah has arrived." I'm still clinging. I'm still clinging, Vinny.
Me too.
Please let him be for real.
Yeah, me too. And what was it? I think it was Dr. Leonard Caldwell, who's cured like 30,000 people of cancer or whatever. He said, people say this very stupid thing. They say, "Oh, don't give them false hope." And he goes, "That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Every hope is good."
Exactly, of course. Look, as a nurse in ICU, the way they negatively say horrible things to people and then they die, well, what do you expect? You say, "Look, it's very serious, but you know what? You're a fighter. You got to be hopeful. Where there's life, there's hope." I'd always be positive, and then I would actually get in trouble. So, "Oh, don't give them false hope, Brendan." Give me a break.
Now, I only of the words false hope, because can you hold hope in your hand? You know, it's like, oh, this one's real, but this one's not, you know. Both, like,
hope is life.
Hope is not tangentry, you know. You can't hold it. None of it's real, all right? It's all a thing that we tell ourselves to get through the day. And quite frankly, getting through the day from one to the next is what survival is all about.
Man, I just hope there's a death to the medical industry. That's all I can say. I saw 90% of those people are all lifestyle. It's all, it's just an industry like the arms industry, like the oil and gas industry. You know, Tom Bearden stuff, Zero Point Energy. It's been proven 1,000 times. And now apparently a certain Texas radio show host assures us that Donald Trump is going to be releasing all the technology they've got stashed away. So that's another thing to look forward to. They're going to bring out the free energy batteries. You know,
and artillery battery is not included.
Not sure how that's going to power your arc welder, but
yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I don't know. Trust to hope and so on and so forth. You know, it's all good, But what was it? I'm going to assume the worst until I see evidence to the contrary. That's what my approach has been in the news game since discovering that most of the things that you think are true are actually lies, and most of the things you think are lies and like racism and so on and so forth are actually true and based upon real evidence and so on and so forth.
Well, look, Trump could be the ultimate limited hangout ever because you had a grassroots awareness growing, grassroots movements growing. It was grassroots everywhere. And all of a sudden, they've all been condensed into the messiah called Trump. And I hope that somehow he's just the result of a nationalistic element with him. Remember, Trump's a nobody. He's just a showman. The real people are the intelligence community and the policing and the armed forces, military intelligence in particular. And he's got advisors like Dr. Steve Pachenik, the ultimate Pentagon insider, psychological warfare operator. So these are the people he's got. And he even said Israel did 9/11. And I got some shtick when I put that up, that interview that a certain unnamed radio host from Austin put up. And I don't know, but I don't blame someone from Chicago, from Cleveland, and from Detroit voting for Trump. I don't blame them because he probably will bring Jewish and he will bring stuff because the cat's out of the bag, the horse is bolted, and the first thing they do, these psychological warfare operators at the top with the money and the resources, is they stick their jockey on it. And it could be that Trump isn't a natural nationalistic outlet of disgruntled intelligence people and business people, which is what we hope. What he may well be is, in fact, a limited hangout run by the same globalists we claim we want to get rid of, or maybe it's just another faction of that group. We don't know, but we live in hope. And if he starts arresting mass pedophile rings at the top, I don't know. Let's wait and see, I guess.
Well, as they say, in a probabilistic reality, anything is possible. In a cannibalistic reality, anyone is edible.
It's like that. Was it Wolfgang Pauli? The cat theorem in quantum physics. Till you open the box and see the cat. What's it called?
If you've got a cat in a box, you don't know if it's alive or dead. And until the point open the box, the cat is both living and dead.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
Till next time. It's good night from him.
You're both here. And not here until you get there.
Oh, I'm going to have to go and smoke something after that.
One can only hope.
Not in Malaysia, though. Don't ever smoke in
Malaysia. No marijuana in Malaysia? This is...
You might end up in... Well, not publicly. I'll show you death penalty here for drugs. For, over 30 grams, over an ounce or something. I don't know what it is.
Well, you'll be...
Child trafficking is also the death penalty.
You'll be Brendan O'Chappelle Corby before long, bro.
I'm a goody two shoes, man. Gin and tonic every now and again's about me.
Well, you never know. I live in hope that one day Australian Federal Police will open my boogie board bag and shove 3 pounds of marijuana in there while I'm on my way to a country where it has a cheaper street value than the country I was just leaving. And then I spend the rest of my life in a Balinese prison. That'd be great. I mean, we live in a very sunny world, it's the lucky country. And in fact, one more thing before we go, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody thinks they live in the greatest country in the world. New Zealand, it's God's zone. Australia, it's the lucky country. America, it's the greatest country on earth. Everybody thinks they're the greatest country on earth. And that's only to divide you against all the other countries that you haven't visited, don't know anything about, and don't realise they're full of people that are just like you who are actually pretty cool to hang out and have a beer with, or have a joint with, or do anything with, that it connotes some kind of human feeling and connection with your fellow man. All right. I'm Vinny Eastwood. My very special guest has been Brendan O'Connell, and I need to make sure that we get your website out there, isolatebutpreserve.blogspot.co.nz, I believe is the one. Is that the one that it is?
Yeah, isolatebutpreserve.blogspot.com, and it'll take you to the local server. I got that name from a book, Isolate But Preserve, from the Russian Jewish poet Yosef Mandelstam, and he wrote some lovely poetry about Stalin, and when they arrested him, he said, "Are you going to kill me?" And he said, "No, we're just going to isolate but preserve you," and they shoved him in Siberia. That's where I got the name from.
Oh, nice, bro. You're like an exilee. And I was thinking about my, drug convictions, and there's this myth that I can't travel and so on and so forth, and I feel like, well, as long as this is New Zealand is my Siberia, this is a pretty nice Guantanamo.